Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Welcome to True Crime Cast, the Patreon edition. I am John, here with Jamie. How you doing, man?
I'm all right, buddy. I'm all right.
I got our names right today.
You did. That's good. It's a good start to an episode.
I love it. So how you doing? Like, what's new? Any updates on cases? All that good stuff.
Oh, that's a great question. I've kind of been all in lately on the new Karen Reed trial. It started last week and started off with a bang. I've been making some TikToks making fun of it because every time you get on social media, half of social media has one take on what just happened and the other half has a completely different take. And I'm like, how are you all watching the same trial?
And help me remember what you think happened.
Yeah, I think...
Karen's guilty or you think it was the other possibilities?
This is the most I don't know situation I think I've been in. I think it's very possible she accidentally hit him. But I also think the people in the house are hiding something because they're being super shady. Like, why be so shady if you're not hiding something?
Bro, you know I'm a rubbernecker. Like, if I see, like, police cars and ambulance at your house, I'm either driving up there or riding my lawnmower up there. Like, but there's not a scenario where I don't just figure out what's going on.
Let's go with the scenario of she accidentally hit him with the car. The people inside the house knew it and still let him die. Everybody's guilty. Boom.
It's like Agatha Christie novel. Like, everyone's a suspect, but we only have one person on trial.
The Supreme Court just earlier today denied her last claim at trying to say that it would be double jeopardy to charge her again. So that's over. They're using a lot of the clips she did for her recent documentary in the prosecution now. I don't know why she keeps talking. So I don't know. It's a lot going on.
It's a lot, and we will keep you posted. Jamie's doing a great job over on TikTok of keeping us informed on that case, so thank you, Jamie.
A lot of the other cases we follow just haven't had anything happen lately. I search often for Mickey Steins or Doug Harless updates. Rachel Morin's killer was found guilty, but he hasn't been sentenced yet, so.
Doug Harless. That is a name I will never forget. London, Kentucky.
It's been a lot going on. Yeah. I've been to London a lot lately. I always legitimately wear, I won't say a disguise, but I don't look normally like I do.
Yeah.
I'm nervous.
You guys will never know the full story on all that, but we got tangled up in that one. And London is corrupt. That's all I'm going to say. And I'm not saying who's corrupt in London, but the city itself is full of corruption. Everyone is corrupt.
Everyone except us. We're not corrupt.
I'll never go to London again.
I had no choice to go.
Jamie, we've got a case today, man, that is just insane. So if there are no other updates, let's do this thing.
Insane in the brain.
You good?
Yeah, get us rolling.
All right, man. To say this one leaves a mark is an understatement. This one is just pure evil. I don't know. It's a remarkable story of determination, of fortitude. We're going to talk about Mary Vincent. This is a 15-year-old girl who survived an attack so brutal and unimaginable that it's actually a miracle that she lived to tell her story. And Jamie, there is no doubt in my mind that that 15-year-old girl is tougher than I ever have been in my entire life.
Or ever will be.
Physically.
No offense.
No, physically, mentally, she is the very definition of a warrior, and I think her story is incredible. So let's talk more about who Mary Vincent is.
Yeah, at the start, she's like any other teenager. There's a 15-year-old that lives in your house. I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old about to turn 15, so we're very familiar with this age group. They're caught between wanting to be independent and still needing their parents. I think kids these days are more...
soft.
Okay. Yeah. That's where I was going. I wasn't going to say it. I was going to say more seeking support than people.
Oh, no, I wasn't meaning that. I just meant like when I was 15, there would be like half a day or more my parents had no idea where I was at. And we were just built different. Like, we were survivors. I was a, if there was a latchkey kid back then, it was me. I mean, I was cooking my own meals. I was taking care of my sister. My mom was like working her butt off to provide for us financially, which meant I was alone all the time.
I legitimately thought you were about to say meth. I don't know why. Cooking my own meth.
No, it was cooking my own meals.
I've been watching, rewatching Breaking Bad.
Look at me, bro. Do I look like I'm eating meals or smoking meth? I mean, it's definitely meals.
Great question. Yeah, but no, that's exactly what I meant. I feel like needy might not be the right word, but dependent. They're more dependent than they used to be.
Absolutely.
Mary wasn't somebody looking for trouble. She wasn't reckless or wild. She was just young, vulnerable, and trying to figure out her place in the world, like so many teenagers seemed to be at that time. This is also a different time in American history because Mary was hitchhiking, something that I guess still happens, but people, I feel like, have to be super desperate before they will hitchhike nowadays, right?
Absolutely. And I would, oh God, if I ever found out my kids were hitchhiking, if they didn't get murdered, I might kill them, you know?
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Don't call social services on me.
Tell us more about Mary's youth, please.
Yeah, she grew up in Las Vegas, and she was one of seven children in a working class family. Her dad was a mechanic. Her mom was a dealer at a casino. And by all accounts, life at home was not easy. Her parents were constantly working, so the kids, they had to fend for themselves. And I definitely relate to that. Mary was known for being independent, resourceful, strong-willed, even as a little girl. But like a lot of teenagers, she started feeling stifled. She wanted to get out more and wanted to have a life of her own. And she wanted freedom. And God, I remember that was one of the strongest emotions I can remember as a teenager, was just wanting freedom, wanting to not conform to the rules of my parents, but live my own life. And she also wanted a fresh start somewhere else. So she struck out on her own, or tried to.
Yeah, she kind of felt invisible because there were so many kids in the house. Her family had so many things going on. She didn't get the attention she probably needed. And it's no surprise that she did run away. She left home with a boyfriend, thinking that together they could figure out how to make life work. For a while, they lived out of a car in California. It wasn't ideal, but for Mary, she was out of the house. This was her idea, at least at the time, of freedom. It was possibility. It was the world was in front of her, and she felt good about herself. Even at 15, you know, you're out there trying to figure out who you are, and you're going to make your mark on the world, and that's what she was looking for. Quickly, though, things turned bad for her and her boyfriend as he was arrested for raping another teenage girl. And suddenly, Mary found herself all alone. And while she was craving independence, she was really trying to find her place with people because she had kind of been alone her own life. So she's alone again and kind of back in the same situation she was in before she left.
Yeah. And I mean, golly, 15 years old, being completely alone like that, I can't even imagine the emotion she has. But she kind of did what I think I would have done in this situation. Like, things at my house were not awesome, but I freaking loved my grandparents' house. It was, if there was a safe haven when I was a kid, it was there. And I felt loved. I felt wanted when I was there. So I would have wanted to get there. And that's exactly what she did. The problem was they lived in Corona, California. It was a long trip. It was almost 400 miles from where she was. But as we said before, she was determined. So she packed up what little she had. She walked out to the road. She stuck her thumb out and hoped that someone decent would give her a ride where she needed to go.
Yeah. And so we haven't said this. We kind of alluded to it. This was back in 1978. Hitchhiking was much more common then. And at that point, I think people were deciding, does that person look trustworthy enough for me to pick them up? Whereas now it's, yeah, I'm not picking anybody up.
Unless you're me, and then I've made some questionable decisions.
Has it been recent? I feel like I had when I was younger.
It's been within the last year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
And I think I start that conversation off with, I'm giving you a ride. I don't care to kill you if it comes to that.
Okay. I mean, you told me that last time we went to a ball game, so it was...
I only do it when I'm by myself and I'm protected. I'll say that.
That was how a lot of people got around back then, especially young people who either couldn't drive or didn't have enough money for a car. But as we know now, Mary found out the hard way that not only are people that are hitchhiking potentially dangerous, but those looking to pick up hitchhikers are often, not often, are sometimes looking for people that are vulnerable and can be taken advantage of. And that's terrifying. It wasn't Mary's naivety or her poor judgment that put her in danger. It was the fact that there was somebody evil out there on that same road looking for somebody like her to take advantage of.
Yeah, and that someone was Lawrence Singleton. So a little bit about this guy. He was a 50-year-old man, and dude, at a first glance, he did not look very threatening. He was neatly dressed. He was clean cut. He was driving a blue van, and I guess anytime you hear the word van on a crime show, you're like, yeah, red flags go up.